Michael Fried is a serious critic and art historian. His books are aimed at scholars. His essays appeal to connoisseurs. So you might pity the poor radio interviewer who had to make intelligent conversation with this paragon of aesthetic sensibility. But Steve Paulson discovered Fried's a really friendly guy who's easy to talk to.
I've heard that you used to hang out with the famous art critic Clement Greenberg.
Yes, I knew Greenberg well. I went to Princeton at 16, and within a couple of months of, I went there to be a scientist, and then I discovered poetry and I discovered art. I had actually gone to art school and stuff like that when I was younger. I'd painted. But I became friends with the painter Frank Stella. I was a freshman and he was a sophomore. We, you know, connected then. And Stella and I and another artist at Princeton in those years, a man named Darby Bannard, all became aware of Greenberg as a critic. Greenberg at that point really wasn't writing publicly very much, but he had written. And his was the one body of writing about contemporary art that seemed really helpful and useful to us. And I owe a lot to Stella and others in that kind of awareness. Also, remarkable things were happening in New York, and Princeton was kind of an hour away and the trains were running. So I really got very involved in contemporary art while still an undergraduate. And in the spring of my junior year, so I was going from being 18 to 19, I got Greenberg's address and wrote to him. This was before the publication of his selected essays. Art and Culture, I think, came out in 1961. And I wrote him and said, could I come and visit him? The kind of thing you do when you're young. And he said yes, and I came there. And this, it must have been sort of like May 58 or something. And then I knew him from that moment. I then went to England for 3 years. I had a Rhodes Scholarship at Oxford for 2 years. Then I lived in London for a year. And I had done trial art reviews, too, for Hilton Kramer, who was then editor of Arts Magazine. It's a long story, but I suddenly was, at 22, living in London, a special student in philosophy, and the London correspondent for Arts Magazine.
It was not a bad life.
It was very, very heady. The very first opening I went to, I sat opposite a guy at dinner, and that was the British sculptor Anthony Caro. And I went and saw his work the next weekend and was overwhelmed by it. And we've been friends till. And then when I returned to America, I saw a lot of Greenberg. I was then a graduate student in art history at Harvard, but once a month I would go to New York and stay with Frank Stella and his then-wife, Barbara Rose, for about 3 days and go around and see exhibitions, go back, write my New York letter then for a magazine called Art International, and go back to being a graduate student. But I saw a lot of Greenberg.
Did you look at art together?
Yes, yes.
And I mean, so you would talk about it then?
Oh, yeah, and went to studios together, and when I was working on Morris Lewis, we would go to the warehouse and look at in effect, I was apprenticed to Lewis, to Greenberg, as a young critic, as other people in my generation were. This wasn't, you know, a unique status for me. And also, as with most other people in my generation who went through this, at a certain point, being around Greenberg became impossible. I mean, he was a... it's a euphemism to say a very difficult man.
Overbearing, I mean, yeah, to put it mildly.
Yeah, and also unpleasant. I mean, ultimately a killer. I mean, he was encouraging to one at the very, very beginning, and then as you became something other than just an utter beginner, almost invariably turned on you. And you had to just stop seeing. And that happened with me. It happened with lots of us. But I was formed as an art critic, reading Greenberg, being around Greenberg,
now Greenberg,
reacting against Greenberg. You know, it's just a major figure dialectically in my critical life.
Now, Greenberg is probably most famous for championing abstract expressionists like Jackson Pollock.
And then color field abstraction afterwards. And mm-hmm. Yeah, yes.
And so was that the art that you tended to look at with him?
Yes, and color field art. I mean, more art after. Mm-hmm. After abstract expressionism. So Morris Lewis, Kenneth Nolan, Jules Olitsky, mm-hmm. Caro himself. I mean, it's a strange moment now. Greenberg was such a dominant figure. And he also was, in various ways, such a thug and a bully. But he was also he was one of these people just extremely strong psychically. I mean, if he were in a room, you'd feel these kind of waves of psychic disturbances. There were a meter that could register it. And he intimidated the hell out of people. He took such a strong stand. No, I would say early on, all of us would sort of, but no, I mean, we all had to break with him. No, I would say not. And that, I think, was part of the problem. I mean, this is what I would like to think. Mm-hmm. You're sort of shattering. You had to go through this whole experience with Clem. And he was also making such strong claims about the quality of certain art and the lack of quality in certain other kinds of art that since he died, everyone is thrilled. He's not around anymore. And so they've turned against him, but also against all the art that he championed. All the art he championed, I don't mean Pollock, but say Caulfield abstract, that's all in purgatory. If you go to certain kinds of places where contemporary art hangs, museums where it hangs, you'll suddenly, that painting is in storage at this moment. I've actually been going around making a proposal, and that is that we dig, that we do it, what the Restoration did with Oliver Cromwell. Dig him up, hang him, behead him, burn him, and get past it. I mean, let's get the revenge over with and then get this art out of purgatory and go on. But as it is, I think it's going to be like another 20 years. It's going to require probably the death from old age of everybody who was intimidated by Clement Greenberg.
But you're really talking about the power of one art critic. I mean, not an artist, but a critic
That's
who really
right.
shaped a generation's response to art.
That's right. I think so. I think so. He was sort of archaic to talk this way, but he had a very good eye. He wrote very powerfully. And then he just was psychically, I mean, he was a very dominating kind of figure. And it's not that he was always right, but, I mean, if you want to see how good he is, you can even forget what he wrote about contemporary art. But look at the essay he wrote on Cézanne. Look at the essay called Collage. I mean, those are stunning essays.
Does art still thrill you?
Yeah, absolutely. Totally.
You still have the you can have that same feeling of
totally.
Freshness of wow that you did when you were 19.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Actually, a sweet moment yesterday with a graduate student who we were looking at, I was showing them some Clifford Stills and Barnett Newman's in the National Gallery and sort of talking about them, and Pollock, a great Pollock, called Lavender Mist. And I was talking about the kind of incommensurable explosion that took place in American art at that moment and how we still don't fully have our heads around it. And she said to me, well, you say all that, but, you know, do you think it's as great as Cézanne? And so I answered that as best I could. You'd say, look, it is hard to compare over those, but yes, I think it's at least as extraordinary in a certain way. And she said, you really are a hard case. And she meant it very sweetly, and I took it very sweetly. I said, yes, you know, yes, I absolutely love art and poetry. I'm just thrilled that this turns out to be a way I can spend my life.
Art historian Michael Fried teaches at Johns Hopkins and has published many books of art criticism. He talked to Steve Paulson.